Hello and welcome to Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken, the show where we spill the tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth. I'm your roast, Rowan. Your roast? I'm your roast dinner, Rowan. I'm your host, Rowan. And in this week's episode, we're talking all about healing the inner teen. Now, you may be wondering, where have you been? But maybe you're not, because probably by now, you're used to me just disappearing for long periods of time. Now, I have been gone for some time, and during that time, my dad passed away. Yeah, I will say it's a complicated one. How interesting that this season launched with an episode on grief, how apt, and the complications of grief, because this was indeed a really challenging time. I really struggled with the duality that existed for someone who was perhaps something else to so many other people. I've had a very complicated relationship with my dad, and we hadn't spoken for years. He'd made a passively active decision to stay out of touch, and there's that duality again. He wouldn't call, but he wouldn't be rude when I did. And I would call regularly up until the point where I think I was maybe in my early 20s, only a few years ago, complete lies, I wish. And I stopped calling. You know, I kind of questioned myself, why am I calling? This makes me feel uncomfortable to be calling someone who never stays in touch anymore. You know, I left our family home just after the age of 10, when my mum went to go live in a hotel. And we didn't really, he didn't work hard enough to build that relationship. And I think that's something that I'm really coming to terms with. You may have just caught me there using the word we instead of he. So an idea of blame, actually, and putting blame on myself as the child who it wasn't my job to make that level of effort during my teen years to maintain and retain contact with my father. That's not a child's job to do. And that's really where a lot of this episode's come from. Now, I found it really difficult being at the funeral and listening to someone be eulogized with such positivity, which, you know, I completely agree they should. That's the correct space. But it really felt painful. Because what it did for me, it wasn't purposeful. It eradicated a lot of trauma and challenges that I'd experienced growing up. And then after that, I was working away from home, actually. I've been away in Asia for nearly a month. So do forgive me for the longest. I don't think it is our longest season break ever, but it has been a long time indeed. So as you will have guessed from the title, we are talking today about healing the inner teen. Now, why, Rowan, talk about healing the inner teen and not the inner child? I think we've probably had a lot of talk about the inner child on the pod, and I think there's a lot of online discourse, especially around in podcasts as well, about healing the inner child, but there's very little about healing the inner teen. And there is something very different about the two, and this is something that I've been spending a lot of time thinking about. The teenager, they sit at the threshold of childhood and adulthood, this innocence, and an antonym for corruption. seems really wrong. And it felt like the perfect topic for sitting in what I feel at the moment, which is this kind of muddy middle, this liminal portal, this threshold that I feel like. And I'd like to explore that a little bit further in some of the work that I've been doing. Actually, even before my dad passed away, I've been doing it over the winter, which is always a good kind of shadow work time. Do a little bit of shadow work. The teenage years, they're a significant time for both brain development, identity development. And, you know, I mentioned brain development. It's quite interesting. The prefrontal cortex, that's the bit that's responsible for decision making, which I think we've talked about in this season before as well. And, you know, the section that's therefore managing things like impulse control, understanding consequences of actions. This doesn't fully develop until we're like in our mid-20s. So when we talk about the inner teen, we're also talking a part of us that's still learning to navigate the world, making mistakes, the same as the child. But perhaps one of the most important differences, it's the separation from the parents into the self, the formation of identity that's quite important here too. And I've always used this idea of healing trauma and the inner child. But it wasn't until very recently that I realized so much of this trauma and difficulty that I had have actually not come from my childhood, but it's actually really come from my teen years. And when I think of teen years, I really think of like slamming doors, running to the room, crying, wearing black eyeliner, the really kind of stereotypical ideas of who a teen is. And while I'm making generalizations about teens there, I think I did all of those things actually. And yeah, I've been thinking about things like decision making, impulse control, understanding the consequences of your actions, and I've kind of stocked, is that right? Yeah, I've chalked, I don't know, a lot of that up to just my personality or the ADHD that my mum tried to medicate with homeopathic remedies. I am not even joking. Although that's probably not a shock to many of you who are out there in the community and probably do try those things yourself. Seems like a weird thing to throw in there. I used to have these tinctures that my mum had. Some of them, I think, were ones that she'd made. Some of them were back remedies. I don't know whether you have that outside of the UK. BACH, as in the composer, and you'd have them under your tongue. There were some that I had at the start of the day, some that I had at the end of the day. And I just love the fact I started this podcast talking about how she was absolutely a witch, and that confirms it even more. I love that her solution to ADHD was witchcraft. I think that just makes her more fabulous in my mind. So while the inner child and healing the inner teen, they do share some similarities of addressing past traumas and building up self-understanding, things like growth, they do differ mainly in that developmental stage and the specific issues they aim to address. So I thought just start by maybe addressing and comparing the two, and then I'd like to go into how you might know that the inner teen is showing up now, where you currently are, and then kind of how you might be seeing that there might be some unresolved issues that you might need to manage. So for the inner child, within the developmental stage, this typically refers to the psyche that might retain things like memories, experiences, feelings from early childhood, all the way up to the pre-teen years. And healing the inner child has a tendency to focus on involving addressing fundamental issues of things like safety, security, love, and belonging, and is something that can be quite crucial in resolving some foundational traumas and fears, addressing things like neglect or relearning things like basic trust, and things like self-worth. Whereas comparatively, the inner teen is responding to things that we mentioned before around impulse control, but also emotional control, social changes. One of the big things there is involving identity exploration, the idea of increased independence, even things like planning and understanding consequences as well. I suppose that comes back to impulse control. So some of the focus that we might be looking at when we're thinking about healing the inner teen is thinking about healing, focusing on things like identity, self-expression, the idea of belonging, both inside a family unit, but also quite importantly, outside a family unit. And that might even involve things like the workplace, building relationships as well, which goes in with things like major life choices and experiences like romantic relationships, academic or social failures or successes. It might as well within that involve things like working through, as I've mentioned, things like rebellion, confusion, and intense emotions of adolescence, which I just don't really think we're very prepared for, quite frankly. Now, one of the core texts that I've come to with inner child working is from John Bradshaw, but there is There is such limited literature when it comes to working with the inner teen. The Bethany Webster, she's known for her work on healing the mother wound, which I'm sorry, just sounds gross to me, but I get it. That's disgusting. I've drawn some resources today from Josephine Hardman, who has a PhD. Don't PhD in what? I don't know. Her name says Josephine Hardman, PhD. She's an intuitive healer who also writes about the topic of the inner teen. But as I've mentioned, the information is really scarce. So much of it is unfounded. It's not based on empirical evidence. It's not scholarly at all. It's based on observations. It's just, a bunch of people just talking a bunch of shit about stuff we've observed, and here I am adding to the problem. So I'm aware that some of this might come out sounding a little bit like a pop quiz that you might take in a magazine. And do take that with a grain of salt. This is coming from a witchy podcast. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychotherapist. My doctoral research is in education and identity formation, which, yes, has some links, but it's not to do with this. So these are some of the things that I've grouped with kind of thinking about how do you know that you have some issues with your inner teen. And then after that, I want to kind of talk about healing some of those and kind of witchy integrations within that, because that's the name of the show. That's what we do here. So you might find yourself having strong emotional responses to situations that remind you of your teenage years. That can include things like interactions with authority figures, so that could be your boss, could include things like your peer relationships or romantic encounters, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, etc. It could invoke feelings of inadequacy, rejection, intense anxiety, similar to perhaps what you experienced as a teenager. And of course, that's an example. Now, for me, this can sometimes manifest in my marriage, where if my husband is unexpectedly quiet, I freak out. And I talked about my mum a lot on the podcast before. I think she's come up in every bloody episode. But sometimes she would shut down and not talk for months. And that's not me being hyperbolic. Yes, she would talk to other people, but she would not talk to me. And I see now that's because of her mental health. But at the time, I internalized so much of this. So now, when my husband or even other people is quite quiet or non-responsive, I freak out. I think that they're mad at me, or I worry that it might go on for months. I don't know when it's going to end. And just knowing something like that has been incredibly helpful in understanding my reaction to it, my emotional responses to certain things. I've talked about this one on the podcast before, things like when my son screams at me, I get absolute flight or fight panic. And that really comes from the way that I was talked to both as a child and as a teenager with aggression and screaming. But knowing that allows me to kind of step outside of myself to reparent myself a little bit, which I'll talk about more in a short moment. Now, if you struggle with a stable sense of an unstable sense of identity, or have ongoing issues with things like self-esteem that perhaps stem from your teenage years, that might be another sign as well. You might have feelings that you're not good enough, you're struggling with body image, or not knowing your place in the world. Those could be signs of unresolved inner teen issues. Now, to me, these also just seem like what it feels like to live in the modern world, unfortunately, especially for us poor bloody millennials. Some of the worst media that we had to consume in our teen years, I think, really speak to feelings of not being good enough, struggling with body images, images, image. The media that we consumed about the bodies that were deemed to be fat, which were normal, healthy bodies, it's disgraceful. I have got such a dysphoric relationship with my body that has existed for years and years and years. I was a heavier teen. Yes, I definitely was a heavier teen. And I lost 8 stone. I can't think what that is in kilograms right now off the top of my head, or pounds. And that has had an effect on my body, a negative effect on my body, which I haven't talked about a lot until quite recently, where I'm now I acknowledge that I can run half marathons. I can climb mountains, but I'm still disgraced by the body that I have for what the media has told me my body should have and what the media told my told me that my body should have had in my teen years. And I think there have been great things that have happened in the media for women, for female bodies, female presenting bodies, particularly with the size of bodies, the shape of bodies. Has the same thing happened for male bodies? No. And I think people might counter the argument by talking about the dad bod, but particularly in male model fashioning, look at underwear models. Do you see a single man who does not have washboard fucking abs on a packet of underwear? It's disgraceful. It's really, really disgraceful, the bar that is set for men in terms of the bodies that they have. And I feel that with this kind of the shift into what we would maybe deem healthier bodies now actually has created for men quite a challenging to attain body aesthetic where there are incredibly visible muscles, so high muscle mass, low fat percentage. So I don't feel like the positives have really been reflected for men in that same way. Just talking all the shit on this podcast today. I love it. Some other ones, I'm really known for this one. I have lost jobs because of this one. Persistent patterns of rebellion against authority or societal norms. Or it could be the opposite. It could be that you have excessive compliance and you are a people pleaser. Some of that can be traced back to teenage attempts to assert independence or fit in. I do think there's something that fits in there also with the studies around imposter syndrome, and I can't think about where that the name of the person who does that study. Sorry, look it up, Google it. And that is particularly linked to high achieving females. And the idea of people please because of poor self-esteem. And I do have a tendency to sit with the first and be quite rebellious. This whole bloody podcast is about that principle. The amount of emails and Instagram messages that I get of quite irate people who I have upset. But that's just what we do here sometimes. Although not so much these days. Season three is, I feel like it's less rebellious. It's a different vibe. I was such a rebellious teen. I was such a rebellious teen. But I was also, was I? I was a different kind of rebellious. I was still kind, still charismatic, still polite. I was rebellious in that sense of I liked to dress the way that I dressed. I went to a Catholic school and I grew my hair out long and I was told I couldn't. I dyed it black and I was told I couldn't. And there were all these rules that girls had. And things about having hair, the way that if they were to dye their hair, it had to be a natural color. And I was doing all the things that the girls were doing. Painting my nails. I used to go in, I've probably said this on the podcast before, I used to go with my nails painted every single goddamn morning. And my form tutor would make me take it off every single morning. And then I'd have them painted the next day. My nails were absolutely effed up from the amount of chemicals put on them. But I did it. It was my really subtle rebellion that didn't affect my grades. It didn't affect anything that I was doing. It was just a way to rebel against those expectations because I didn't really want to be rejected, I don't think. But it was just a way to assert my identity. And that has really come into my adulthood where, if I feel that I'm being oppressed in any particular way, I'm being told to conform to a particular standard. Now, I know I have a colleague who I used to work with who listens to this show, and she will know that I have such a fine-tuned sense of justice barometer. And if I feel that other people are being oppressed, I speak out at the detriment of my job. It has happened in the past. And I know so much of that comes from my teen years. Another one, This makes me feel it. There is a little bit of discomfort with this one. Is things like engaging in risky behaviors, especially if those are a continuation or reminiscent of those from your teen years, so not necessarily new things, perhaps. They might be indicative of things like unresolved emotional or developmental needs from that time. And this is something. Felt like I was going to cry then. I'm not. I just felt like I had like a hiccup burp. I should edit that out. It's something I have been negotiating a lot for a really long period of time, particularly around substance use. And I have talked about this on the podcast. And I am talking about alcohol, no other substances. And it does make me really uncomfortable because, both my parents had difficulties with alcohol. My father, in particular, was a severe alcoholic, which led to multiple strokes and other health complications, which then, of course, eventually led to his death. And I was a teen that drank heavily and carried a lot of that into my early 20s. And it's only now that I'm starting to reconcile this relationship and question not just what I drink, but why and when. And if I'm honest, if I'm really honest with you all on the podcast, I'm just not there with it all just yet. I think substances can be a really helpful coping mechanism. But they're not a healthy coping mechanism. I understand that. They are a way to detach. They're quicker, they're easier. But I do see that it's been incredibly problematic. And I've been working so hard on being reflective of my use of alcohol. And I do really hold myself accountable for that. And I know exactly where all of that comes from. And it's the teen years. Another one is repeatedly finding yourself in unhealthy or unsatisfying relationships, especially if these patterns mimic those of your teenage relationships. This could signal unresolved issues. It could include things like codependency, avoidance of intimacy, or consistently seeking approval from partners. No comment. I think I can comment. I can. I'm so. I'm approval seeking for sure. But I have been incredibly lucky in being with a partner who I think is just a fabulous match. I'm in a satisfying relationship. He doesn't listen to the podcast anymore because he can't seem to get Spotify at the moment. So I could just say shady things now. If you experienced trauma during your teenage years that has not been fully processed as well, such as things like bullying, abuse, or significant loss, tick, 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 that can lead to a range of emotional and physical issues, of course. It's inevitable if unresolved in adulthood. That can include things like anxiety, depression, low self-worth, difficulty trusting others, being avoidant or clingy, those sorts of things. And there's a, what was I had another one. I had another one. Oh yes, a general resistance to change. This one got me good, it got me gross. I'm really bad with change. I hate it. Change could also be things like personal growth and really not wanting to change in that way. But the thing that really bothers me, really simple things. We go into a restaurant, I've got it in my head. This makes you might be thinking this just sounds like an autistic trait, but I don't think it is. I with a son with autism, I know it's not, because of other things. Go into a restaurant, I'm going and I'm having the burger and chips that I have, and I've really thought about it. It's not necessarily that I always have, I've just thought about this burger and I've been talking to myself about this delicious burger and what I'm going to have in the burger and what sauce I'm going to have with the burger, and I'm thinking about the salt I'm going to put on the chips because I don't put salt in my food at home and it's going to be so exciting, and I'm going to get a really nice drink with it, and I go in and they don't have the sodden burger. They could have 100 different options, but I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit what options you have. I want that delicious burger with the Tennessee barbecue sauce. Give it to me now. Don't give me anything. It's so true when I hate it. And I totally ruin the experience for me and everyone else. I'm that bitch. I'm really resistant to change and I hate it. Do I know where that comes from in my inner teen years? No, I don't. No, I don't. I don't have an answer for you. Could it be the amount of change that existed in my life? I moved around a lot. There were a lot of difficulties and challenges there. No, I don't have an answer. I'll come back to you on that one. So you figured out that your inner teen, she needs healing. She's beat up. She's not looking too good. She's battered. She's bruised. She's raggedy. She's janky. She smells real bad. What can we do? How are we going to heal her? So we're going to look at some of the mundane things, and then we'll move into the metaphysical. And often there are crossovers with these. So, by the very nature of things, teenage years, they're fraught with challenges, including things like we've mentioned: identity exploration and peer pressure, first loves, blah blah blah. Acknowledging these experiences as valid and impactful is a real good first step in healing. And I think we pass off a lot of those experiences, just developments or things that happen to everyone, as in those things in our teenage years. And what we do by doing that is we begin to minimize some of the aspects of our lives that were actually incredibly traumatic. And I found that saying out loud that was not okay has been a huge validating step for me in understanding some of those challenges. Now, I mentioned Bethany Webster before, and she, on her website, refers to the idea of inner mothering. Why not inner parenting? Come on, why am I going to gender this? Why am I going to gender it? Inner mothering, inner parenting, validating the inner teen, nurturing them, cherishing them. See, a father can do this, listening and respecting them. So much of my teen experience was about not being listened to. There are going to be some trigger warnings with this one. I'm talking about like trying to unalive yourself. So, oh, that's such a social media. I'm talking about suicide. I'm talking about suicide. Let's just say the freaking word, kids. When I was bullied in school, I was really horrifically bullied in school. People called me a faggot. Trigger warning. They called me all the words about being a faggoty gay. And of course, I didn't do much to help my situation. As you know, I dressed as feminine as I possibly could, which is not me today. I would be, of course, verbally abused by my peers. I'd also be physically abused, whether that was spat on, I'd have things thrown at me, furniture items in a classroom thrown at me with a teacher present in the classroom. And now I remember going and having a conversation with, I think it was the deputy head at the time, who brought in my form tutor. And do you know what the solution was to the bullying? It was agreed that I didn't have to turn up to form time in the morning. And to my American listeners, form time, I don't know what the equivalent is actually, but it's like a type where you go and you register yourself. Homeroom, is that the word? You go and register yourself. They sort out pastoral aspects of your education in theory, and the solution was just to not turn in, just to not turn up. What the fuck does that do? It's not just a teen, but to an adult. I was really not listened to. And I remember telling my mum that I was, at one point, I was really incredibly low. This was, we'd been moving around a lot. My mum had been going through months of just not talking to me. I was really bullied at school. And it's the summer holidays, and she hadn't spoken to me in a long time. And I was so low, one of the lowest points of my life. I wasn't out to my mum at this point. And I'd heard her saying some really derogatory things about other gay people as well. And just felt really like I wasn't accepted in this world. And we've got to think back to the time that this was, in the sense that, we're just coming out of the 90s, and media, we didn't have RuPaul's Drag Race. As kind of the mass population media, everyone has an understanding of what it means to be queer. They don't necessarily have the acceptance, but an understanding at least. And I decided that this is your trigger warning. I decided to kill myself as a teenager. This gets really serious. This gets real serious now. And I knew deep down that I didn't want to, actually. I kind of missed a part of the story out here, actually. Let's roll back a few. I remember my mum had homeopathic books, as we've kind of discussed. She also had this really old medical book for just the general people of the world. And it was written from like the 1940s, I think it was like the 1930s, 1940s. And they had depression in there. And of course, the definition was they even had hysteria in there. And there was really, really outdated things about that one. But I remember looking up the word depression and showing my mum this definition in the book and her scoffing and thinking I was an idiot for, me saying like I've got these feelings and these symptoms and I think it's this. And she's like, teenagers don't get depression. Teenagers do get depression. They get depression. They get depression to the point where they want to kill themselves. And that's where I was at. Because I just wanted the feelings to stop. I felt like I didn't have a place in the world. And now I've worked incredibly hard today on, and I've talked about this one, developing a real strong inner monologue that will consistently ask, are you okay? And I haven't named them yet, but I see them as the inner parent, that one checking in on both the inner teen and me today. I try to forgive myself now for the things that go wrong, and I avoid the constant looping cycle of self-depreciation. Depreciation? Deprecation. Depreciation. I've lowered in value. Oh, I hate myself. I love myself. I validate myself. Oh, I'm a wanker. I try to catch I do try to catch some of that negative self-talk, and I talk back to it. I don't stop it. I don't stop the negative self-talk. I think it's important to hear it. It's important to hear it come out. But I do talk back to it. I tell it things that I may not believe at the time, but they would be things that I would say to my son if my son was to say things about himself to me. I think I would, I would respond back with validation, nurture, love. And I'm trying to do that more for myself and both my inner team. Now, this is a fun one. This is a fun one. Reconnecting with your inner teen self. That can involve things like reflective practices, and this is where we see this crossover. Things like journaling, shadow work about teenage experiences, meditating on the needs and desires of your teenage self, or this is the fun part, engaging in hobbies or interests that you had during that time. Things like listening to music. For me, that was things like Evanescence, Green Day, Rammstein. I think Rammstein are really problematic now, so maybe I shouldn't admit that. But they weren't at the time. Same for Marilyn Manson. Gosh, everyone is problematic these days. And of course, painting my nails, growing my hair out long, dyeing it. Those were things that I loved. Now I occasionally, when it's the summer holidays and I'm not working, I'll paint my nails. I'll paint them black. And I spent a lot of time as well re reconnecting through journaling, and I found some. I've got a list of prompts. I'll read some of them out, and I'll put some of them in the show notes over on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. I came across kind of a list of inner child prompts, some inner teen prompts, very few, and I ran some of them through ChatGPT, and I've got the really nice big list that I've come to use, which I absolutely love. So there are things like, I've highlighted some that I really liked. What dreams or aspirations did you have as a teenager? Reflect on those, and how have they changed or evolved over time? What messages did you receive about your worth, your body, and your capabilities as a teen? How have these messages influenced your self-perception? Are there things you regret doing or not doing during your teen years? Explore the possibility of forgiving yourself and others. How did you express or suppress your emotions as a teenager? Reflect on the outlets you had or wished you had for emotional expression. How have your beliefs about yourself, others, and the world changed since since your teen years? Why can't I read? You can read. You're a wonderful reader. I I could go through all of them. Some really fantastic ones there, but I'll pop them in the notes for you to review. And they're just, I'll sometimes take myself off to a coffee shop and I'll sit there with my journal and I'll write some responses to some of those prompts and I'll reflect on what that means. And sometimes I get nothing. Sometimes I get absolutely bugger all. But sometimes I go back to that and I realize that there is something in there. So do find a way to record it and not just think about it if you can. I could, of course, talk about other therapeutic practices and aims for self-discovery and acceptance, but I think they're all a bit of a given. I realize saying that, a bit of a given. I do mean to say they're a bit of a given. But this is just really, it's so awkward having to explain an in-joke that is not even funny. So my husband and I were like, when we say, oh, it's a given. Oh, it's just a given. It's just a given that that happens. It's a given that you do that. Oh, it's a given that you give them that. We say it's a gibbon, as in like the monkey. And we think it's hilarious. We're comedians. How dumb is that? I'm so sorry that I had to explain that to you. Let's move on. Let's move on from that awkwardness. And let's talk about getting witchy, of course. You could, oh, easy one. Meditation connection, a conversation with the inner teen. This is, I explained a guided meditation that was done through going through and finding the inner child on my previous podcast, previous episode. Not, it's not like another show that I have that I'm keeping secret. That is one that you can repeat with your inner teen. That's a great one to do. Shadow work is a big duh. We mentioned that. I'm not going to go into any detail within that. And some of those journal prompts, that's a great one for your shadow work. I think all of this just encompasses shadow work, quite frankly. There was something that I came across when I was looking into what I might talk about for this episode, and that was soul retrieval. And now I do not have any knowledge on this one. I read that it's a shamanic practice that involves the belief that part of one's soul can become trapped or lost due to trauma. And then a practitioner might then perform a soul retrieval to help that individual reclaim these lost parts, which could include aspects of the self that were lost during some of the tumultuous teenage years. Now, it's not something I've looked into heavily, but I am super interested. So, if any listeners of the show have either explored this as part of their practice or have been involved in this as a participant before, please let me know. I'd be really interested to hear more about that. Another one that you may already be doing, a lot of my witchy listeners are really into their natal chart, is looking to understand some of those challenges or lessons that were prominent during your teenage years through your natal chart. Looking at those transits and progressions that occurred during adolescence and how they could then shed light on some of those patterns or life lessons that are still relevant or haven't been learned. Yeah, for me, maybe like with my moon in Libra, I think about, I was big on companionship, but particularly close relationships, for example. I only really needed harmony and peace. And because of that, I rarely hung out in groups. There was just too many dynamics and fallouts there. And I do see that that really shows up a lot in my adult life, where I'm big on conflict resolution and I need to have conflict resolved fast. I can't dwell on issues. I find it gross. And I will sit there. I will argue it to pieces with you. I will deconstruct it. But if there is no sodding resolution, and normally a resolution whereby I am the one who is correct, I'm out. I'm not interested. I'm gone. No, I'm very lenient with finding a resolution. This other one, I'm just going to signpost to this one. I'm not going to go into big long detail, but ancestral healing would be a really great way to look at the inner teen, hurt people. And many of the issues that I've seen in my showing up in my adult life that I see coming back from my teen years, they're not even mine in the first place. They're not even my parents. They're my parents' parents. They're my grandparents. There is an episode on the show about that one. Go listen to it. Go listen. Finally, it would not be a Season of the Witch episode with a little bit of spell work. I could talk about Reiki. I'm not gonna. Reiki or chakras? No, I'm not gonna. I don't feel like I have enough knowledge. I am not knowledgeable. So go talk to someone else who is. Let's talk about spell work. So I noted some of this down. This is one that I've done a few times before. I just completely got lost. Completely got lost. I was like, where are my notes on this one? So you're gonna want, these are the things you're gonna want. This is how you know I am not heavily editing this podcast, by the way. You're gonna want a small candle. If you are someone who goes by correspondences, which is not super my thing, you might think about something like blue for healing or pink for self-love. I don't think it's always that important, for me, but I do see the importance of the intention that you put behind it. So if you really want to kind of boost that intention, then yeah, it is important. You're gonna want a piece of paper and a pen, and I know, like, I'm really trying to be that person who doesn't always have spells where it's about writing and burning something or cutting some rope, but I must admit that's like 95% of my spells. I work a lot with different sigils and burning things and flushing, cutting, yada yada, but we're not going to be burning this one, okay? I promise. I promise. You're going to want a small bowl of water. Any bowl, water, any water. You could have moon water. I'm not the kind of bitch who fucks around with moon water because I'm not that organized. Now you could, there are three things that I would include here. You could either have something like lavender or chamomile, which would be good for kind of the idea of soothing, but I actually quite like using yarrow. And I know that sounds like really weird, but yarrow, thinking of it as the perspective of the wound healer. Yarrow was used to, is the word staunch? Staunch wounds? I don't actually know what the definition of staunch is. I just know the phrase staunch wounds, but like healing and stopping the flow of blood. It was used for that. The Romans would kind of wrap wounds in that. Its name comes from Achilles, who, I mentioned this on the podcast before. Did he use it to heal people on the battlefield? Maybe. Take that one with a little tiny pinch of salt because I can't remember whether that's correct. Now, you're also going to want a personal item from your teenage years if you have it. Now, I don't have many personal items from my teenage years. They are few and far between. It might be something that represents quite significantly the aspect of yourself that you're looking to heal, or you could look to manifest this within an object that you imbue with the properties of something from your teenage years. Draw a picture of it. It could be a picture of it, a picture of you. And finally, you might want some music from your teen years. Now, that's not completely necessary. I know some of you might find that really difficult if you are trying to get into some kind of meditative state, but it's about transformation, transforming you into that space. I would also throw in, if possible, some kind of smell. I find smell really transformative. For me, that can be things, even something as disgusting as cigarette smoke, tobacco. Sorry for all you smokers out there. I gave up smoking. I really miss it. But I gave up smoking 14 years ago now. But I find the smell is partly repulsive, but partly intoxicating at the same time, but very transformative. Could be a perfume, could be a fabric conditioner, something smelly. Not necessary. Those are kind of optional items. So create your space. Find a quiet, comfortable space, wherever you like to work. Ideally somewhere that you can set candles down. That's not going to burn your house down. You may choose to cast a circle. If I'm doing that, I'm doing that in the garden. Or you might just envisage some kind of protective, peaceful energy around you. Light your candles, focusing on its flame. You're going to take a deep breath. And as you exhale, visualize something that is both warm, healing, but most importantly, protective. It is preventing anything negative from your inner teen years from entering. And on that piece of paper that you've got, you're going to write either a letter, a postcard, or a note, a phrase, whatever you choose. This is your chance to say anything you wish that maybe you heard back then. You might be offering words of encouragement, of love, and forgiveness. You're acknowledging the struggles, and you are affirming their strength and resilience. You're then going to sprinkle your chosen herbs over the letter. And as you do so, you're going to say something along the lines of, you know, do tweak this. You know, with these herbs, I bring calm and healing to my past. May my inner teenager receive my love, or their loving blessings, something like that. And then you're going to wrap the note that you've got up in the herbs like a little parcel, and you're then going to dip that into the bowl of water. You're going to leave it in there for some time. What this is doing, it's symbolizing this emotional cleansing and renewal of water. And you're going to watch as it softens the paper. Think about it softening that part inside you. It's going to blur the words. You're going to visualize that washing away the pain, any misunderstandings, any self-doubt that your inner teenager felt. And then once you feel ready, you're going to blow out your candles. You're going to thank your inner teenager for their strength and for their resilience, and perhaps even for showing up today. That might be something that you want to work with. You know, instead of working with some of you who work with deities, you might be working with your inner teenage self who you asked to show up today for this one. Now, you could choose to keep the soggy letter on your altar as long as you feel necessary, or you might just bury it outside, returning it to the earth for something that is deeper within your healing process. That was such a fun, why did that laugh sounded like really weird, really like feminine. I just remembered something I did as a teenager. I don't know whether I've mentioned this before. I may have done. I mentioned things like I used to do these sorts of things, and I used to really panic about what I'd written, and I used to wet it and kind of like shove it down the plug hole. Once it wasn't like a full like A4 piece of paper. Once I ate it, I need to edit this out. Oh no, I'm not gonna. I'm just gonna be unashamedly weird. Once I did something very similar to this spell work that I've just mentioned here, and I ate it. Thinking of this idea of like internalizing it, I should have done it on like sugar paper or something. Please don't judge me. No, do judge me. I ingested paper. It's weird, but it felt really significant at the time. I have done things since where I've written on like a tortilla, because that is edible. Paper should not be consumed by the human body. Do not do it. Write on a tortilla. You can actually get pens that have edible ink in them. Don't be ingesting ink and paper. That's really like I actually have no more notes. Such a weird way to end the podcast, but there we have it. We have a real zesty slice of insights on healing your inner teen. It's maybe not your usual sugar-coated advice, trigger warnings abound, but it's the real raw deal, because that's how we roll over here on Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken. We dive deep, we question everything, and we always emerge a little wiser, or at the very least, more in tune with our rebellious, witchy teen spirit. So do crank up your favourite angst-filled anthem from back in the day while you plot your authentic path to healing. You thought I was going to say revenge, but I didn't. I didn't. Now, if you want to sound off about anything you heard in the show today, maybe how much I've offended you, triggered you, ridiculous the idea of healing an inner teen is because it's not based on any empirical scientific evidence, then you can. You can do that over at SOTW with Rowan on Instagram, or by sending me an email at seasonofthewitchpodcast@gmail.com. Now, I do realise that we do have some Cauldron of Candor. I have got an episode that I have recorded that is unreleased. It's in the vault for Cauldron of Candor. But it was not the right vibe. It has not been the right vibe. And I did not want that to be my like welcome back, bitches. So I am still reading things that you're sending through. Do continue to get in touch. Love you all. It's great to be back. You have been listening to Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken. That's me. I'm your host, Rowan. Don't forget, of course, to stay witchy, bitchy, sassy, and classy. I can't write that on social media. I won't let me post it. I've got a tagline that's unusable. Still gonna use it. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.